Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Doubters. And thank you for joining me. If you listen to this, you're joining me on record because actually for the first time ever, I'm here by myself. Nobody's joined me live today. That's okay. I've left the waiting room off so people might come in as we go along. But I just thought I'd hit record and carry on anyway because I've planned this episode and I want to bring this out to you. So today I am here by myself. I've got no guest. And I'm going to be discussing the topic, how to respond from fear. You may have seen in my email that I said I was going to call this how not to respond from fear, but it suddenly occurred to me during the week that the episode really should be about how to respond from fear, how to respond from fear. Because we're living in such uncertain times and it's really natural to feel fearful and it's okay to feel fearful, but we want to be able to respond. It felt important to talk about this topic now because, you know, many of us are coming up from our lockdown holes, as I said, and this is a different experience for everybody out there. Some people haven't really had a lockdown hole. Some people have been on the front line there working against trying to battle this virus. And some of us like me have, you know, really not had much change in what we do on day-to-day life. But having said that, I'm still really looking forward to this being over and being able to meet up with people again. And that's not something I generally crave. So if I'm craving that, I can imagine that other people really are too. But yeah, as we start to look up and look around the world, you know, we're realizing perhaps that the world has changed due to this virus, due to this pandemic, has brought changes. So economic changes, social changes, and there's been a lot going on, and so we're starting to look up now and starting to see what sort of world we're coming up in. And yeah, it's been a bit of a mess. It looks like a bit of a mess, doesn't it? You know, that how I've experienced the lockdown, me and people I've been in contact with, is that what's happened with this situation is that a lot of people have had their greatest challenges come right to the surface. And I've seen this happen, I've experienced this, I've seen this happen in many people I've been speaking to, but then obviously we're seeing this happen on a community and a society level now as well. Some of the biggest challenges are coming right to a level where they can't be ignored anymore. And that brings great challenges, but it also brings great opportunities. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how to respond from fear. And my intention here is I'm just opening up this conversation and I really want to hear what you've got to say about this. I really want to hear your thoughts and what this means to you as well. So, you know, feel free to get in contact with me through my website. The link is oliviadesilva.com/doubters-contribution. And you can get on there and you can let me know your thoughts and what's important to you. But before I get on with this topic, I want to ask you a favour, anybody who's tuning into this, I want to ask you a favour. So I've been going for just over 3 months now and I'm really enjoying this experience, even being here on my own today, I'm still really embracing this space. So for me, this is a learning space. It's a space to just explore all the different aspects related to this concept of the purpose of self-doubt and to talk about them and to learn about them, as I said, and to do that in communication with the community here. As this is going on, I'm writing a book and all my attention at the moment is focused on writing this book. And it's a much bigger task than I ever imagined. And I'm learning as I'm going and it's taking me down paths that I didn't expect. So the book is taking me longer to get out and that's okay. I'm being okay with that. What I would like to ask is for a favour from you. So I'm really not spending much time at all promoting myself at the moment. I'm not great at promoting myself anyway. It's not something that comes naturally to me, but I find it a lot of effort and I haven't really got that energy and that space to do that at the moment. So what I'd like to ask is if you're listening to this, if you're part of this community, if you've enjoyed the content here, you feel like you're getting value, I'd like to ask you to share it. About it. I'd like to ask you to share about it. So either with somebody who you feel might benefit from this as a one-to-one or share it on your social media. I'd love it if you would do that. Share the link to sign up to this community on your social media and just say a little bit about why it is that you enjoy being here, you enjoy my content. So that link is oliviadesilva.com/doubters. Now, this is a private community, which doesn't mean that it's closed off. Anybody can join, but the point is that you have to join. You have to join to be able to attend these live sessions. And I'm really looking to develop this community. I love doing it. I love the energy that's created here between me and my guests. I love the feedback that I get from people. I just love creating this space. So I'm committed to doing this for as long as I can, maybe the rest of my life. I don't know. At the moment, I feel like I could do this for the rest of my life. I'd be happy to do that. So there you go. That's one thing. So share. Promote me. I'm asking for that favour. And then the other thing is, have you got anybody that you think I should be talking to? Who would you love to see come here on The Doubters? Now, my ideal guest, I'm going to put this out there, is Brené Brown. Now, she's a big deal. I don't know if I'm ever going to get her here. Maybe, you know, I'm not closing myself off to that opportunity. I'd love to get Brené Brown here. I'd love to have a conversation with her about these ideas. And also, how she's inspired me. She's incredible. Who would be your ideal guest? Who should I be speaking to? It could be somebody famous, it could be somebody out there, or it could be your next door neighbour or your mum. I don't know. Somebody who you feel that you would like to hear me having a conversation with about something. Let me know. Everybody who I've invited here so far, I have a connection with. But if that connection is you, then that's enough for me. I'd be really happy to have those conversations. So next week, I've got somebody coming on, a guest. I've never spoken to him before. I've connected with him through one of my other guests, Jenny Blake. It's her husband, Michael Carsuni, who's an artist. And he's coming on here to talk about procrastination, or specifically what would we do if there was no such thing as procrastination? What would take its place? So that's going to be a bit of a fun session. I've heard him talking on podcasts and he sounds like such a fun person. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be exciting. But I've never had a conversation with him before. So it's a really small connection, but there is a connection. So anybody that you think I should be talking to, please let me know. And I shall investigate that and follow it up and see if we can get them on here. And then maybe one day we'll have Brené Brown. Who knows? Right, so the topic today is how to respond from fear. And as I said, you know, this feels really pertinent at the moment. It feels really important as we're starting to step out there in the world. It feels like a really important topic for me to be thinking about how to respond from fear, because I look out there and I see the crisis that's going on and I see the suffering that's happened and I don't know what to expect. And even though I've been really fortunate to be quite sheltered from the consequences of this virus, I'm still expecting to be affected. And we just don't know. We just don't know. And there's so much uncertainty out there. And, you know, this is one of the things that I've written about in the book, is the complex and interconnected world that we live in now, and how it's like the chaos effect, the butterfly wings, the butterfly flutters its wings somewhere and then there's a hurricane on the other side of the world. Have you heard that? It's called chaos theory. And we see that. I've written about this in the book, about how we're so interconnected and everything's so complex that we don't know what the impact is going to be of a certain thing. Now, if we look at this pandemic and some of the stuff that's come out of that on the other side, that's coming out, it's kind of strange sometimes that you wouldn't be able to, you know, predict, you can't draw a line between one thing and the other. So who would have known that coming out of this pandemic, we would have ended up with these protests, the Black Lives Matter protests? Who would have been able to predict that? I mean, you may have done if you'd have thought about it very carefully, actually. But what you may not have been able to predict is how that kind of pressure cooker effect I see has created this global response, and how so many people have been activated and motivated to protest. And the difference really now is that so many white people have understood our relationship to this and our impact and the importance of us standing up and speaking about it. So who would have known that that could have come out of the pandemic? But it has done. It's a big challenge, big opportunity there as well. But the point is that, you know, we can't really predict where we're going to go with this. and that creates a huge amount of uncertainty. And I've spoken about this much before, that the human brain does not like uncertainty. We don't like to not know what's going to happen. It's just a natural biological human response. When we see uncertainty, we see threat. And then when we sense uncertainty, we try and fill that space with a story or an action, or try to do something to make it feel better generally. That's our natural biological response. And of course, you know, this relates closely to my concept around self-doubt, because when we open the door to self-doubt, we're opening the door on that uncertainty and that potential threat, not knowing what's going to happen. So the natural response is to try and bring comfort, try not to feel this feeling. And, you know, that can kind of motivate us into all sorts of strange responses, actually. We're reacting. When we react, it's like a chemical reaction. It's like a trigger response. We try to fill that space with something. And as I spoke about last week with my coach Teresa, we were looking at creative responses, and creative responses is not what we've already known. So when we're trying to fill that space too quickly, we're doing it with what we've already known. Well, actually, what we need now is something new. We definitely need something new now. Is a great opportunity for something new now as well. So that is the point of trying to respond. Now, when we respond to a situation, when we respond to that presence of fear, is that we're creating an answer. So the etymology, I always look at the etymology of words. I love that, to really understand what the meaning is. And so the etymology of the word respond is about creating an answer. So when we're responding to something, we're doing that from a space of choice, and we're doing that with responsibility. So responding and responsibility is also related. So responsibility is the ability to respond. So it is important to have a considered response, so that we're not reacting, we're not filling a space with what we already know, which could be damaging. And we're keeping ourselves open to new possibilities and creative solutions, better solutions, because face it, that's what we got the opportunity to do now. So, you know, it's about responding and not reacting. Think about that. When we're faced with fear and uncertainty, not reacting, not having that chemical trigger response, let me fill this space, it's about taking responsibility for our actions and our way forward. So, as I said, I'm just opening up this conversation. These are just some thoughts that I'm having around it that feel really important for me right now, and the stuff that I'm actually focusing on myself. So that's why I'm talking about it. And it's always good really having this space, because it really makes me think about what it is I want to talk about and how I can operate with this stuff. So I'm going to talk about three positions here. I'm going to give you three positions that you can operate from on a day-to-day basis. Now, I live in the practical. I'm a very practical person. All my solutions are very practical. So these are three positions that you can consider and operate from on a daily basis. And the first position, the first thing to focus upon, is getting more comfortable with this comfort. Now, I spoke about this in the episode last week with Teresa again, and we talked about, you know, what I was just saying about when we're in discomfort, is not filling that space with what we've already known and just seeking quick comfort, because that's our biological triggered response, if you like, feel comfortable. But when we can get more comfortable with discomfort, this is where the opportunity arises. So we can treat each moment of discomfort as an opportunity for growth. We can recognize it as an opportunity for growth. So we're not going with those quick answers. So how do we meet discomfort? How do we meet those difficult moments? How do we meet those moments of uncertainty and panic and anxiety when we feel hijacked by our nervous system? It's a really uncomfortable, it's not a nice place to sit in. Now, a few weeks ago, I had Amy Morrison on. She was the XPT certified coach and mental health counselor. And she spoke to us about triggering our parasympathetic nervous system, how to get into our parasympathetic nervous system. And it's really quite simple. So when we're in those dysregulated moments, and you know how you feel in those moments, your heart's beating fast, your breath is shortened, and you can feel that churning in your stomach, that really awful sense. And, you know, this can come from nowhere. It comes from our thoughts. Generally, nothing has to happen in our physical world for this to happen. It's all often in our heads. So how do we meet that moment of discomfort is with we employ our parasympathetic nervous system by extending our out breath. And so Amy talked about how you can try to double the length of your out breath. So if you're breathing in for two, you breathe out for four. And breathing through your nose is the way to do that. So that's the first thing you can do in those moments. And then when you're regulated, when your state is regulated, you your thinking is so much better from that place. So this is what gives you that space to be able to consider a response rather than rushing in with quick solutions, like I said. So the other thing is about this space is about asking questions. So instead of trying to come up with answers, why not ask more questions? Now, Michael Leckie spoke to us about this. He talked about being the know-nothing leader. And he talked about looking for the stupidest question that you can ask, looking for the most basic question you can ask, because actually, you know, that's quite a good exercise, because we can make all sorts of assumptions that create all sorts of conclusions that brings on more and more anxiety if we're not asking those basic questions. So, you know, this is a time, it's when we're not necessarily looking for answers. This is a time where actually more and more questions. So more questions, less answers. That's what to focus on. And, you know, it's quite difficult not having the answer to questions, you know, but try and practice this. When you think you've got an answer, question that answer. That's what self-doubt is essentially about, is questioning ourselves. It's questioning ourselves, I don't know everything. And leaving, and within that, you're leaving room for growth always. So asking the next question. And, you know, it can be really difficult to live in this space of discomfort. And I look at people in these moments. I've suffered a lot with anxiety and self-doubt throughout my life. That's why I do this work, because, you know, this is me. This is what I have to practice. Everything I talk to you about is me and stuff I practice. And I hope it's going to be of benefit to other people. But when I got into those really difficult, challenging moments where I don't know what's going to happen, I look at people of faith and I get quite envious, really. I get quite envious of people who have a really rigid, unshakable faith in a religious way of life, a spiritual way of life. They have that unshakable faith that everything's going to be all right, because that's not my experience of life. As much as I've tried to adopt that position, it's not where I come from. And even when I get through challenges in the past, I look at challenges in the future and I think, yeah, I did that, but am I going to be able to replicate that? I just do not have that foundation of faith and stability in my life. And I'm quite envious of people that do. But having said that, you know, we can still be open, and I'm open. Now, I don't call myself a spiritual person. Definitely not a religious person. As I said, I'm very practical. So if there's any spirituality about me, it's very practical. And it's very much in the day to day. But, you know, I think it's important to remain open to, and I'm a member of 12-step programs, and the 12-step program is based upon having a relationship with a power greater than yourself. Okay, so it is a spiritual program, but the thing about 12-step programs is about overcoming addiction and families related to people who have addictions. The thing about that is having some kind of concept of a higher power. Now, how I've learned to understand this is that I am not the greatest power in the universe. I am certainly not the greatest power. And that's comforting for me to know, because it means I'm not in control. I don't have ultimate responsibility for everything. And that's a real relief to know. And there's so much more out there that I don't understand. I don't know if I believe in a God or not. I don't know what I believe. We don't know. We have no real evidence, do we? So many people do it, so many people don't. But I think the important thing is about remaining open, because in those moments of real uncertainty and fear and anxiety and doubt, it's that kind of remaining open that can bring some kind of comfort. So it's just remaining open. And also, again, not having to have the answers there. Remaining open, having the question, is there something out there that's looking after me? Is there a higher wisdom that's at work? You know, when I look back at my life, it often feels like there is, because so much has happened in my life that's been outside of my control that's brought me to where I am. And yeah, the journey I've been on so many times, that stuff that's happened out of coincidence or people I've met that just had such a massive impact on my life, that stuff I could not have controlled. So sometimes I do believe there's a higher wisdom there, and remaining open to that feels important to me. So that's a bit about, you know, that first principle, first position, first thing to consider, being comfortable with discomfort. That's one way to be able to respond from fear and not react out of fear. So the second position is, now this is about taking action, because if we're sitting in discomfort and just being comfortable with discomfort, then, you know, what's going to happen from there? You might be thinking, well, that's very good, Olivia, but how am I going to get things done? Which is a very good question. Sitting here talking to myself, this is brilliant, I love this. Anyway, so how do I get things done? Well, here's another principle for you, and it is, and I heard this on a podcast this week and it really resonated with me. I heard this on Jason Gott's podcast, Clever Creature, this week. He was a guest here a few weeks ago. We were talking about self-doubt and creativity. So his guest talked about this, guest Shima Olayi, I can't pronounce her name, but she spoke about doing what's in front of me the best way possible. And it was almost like a bit of a throwaway comment. They were talking about faith and action and creative risk. That was the context they were talking about. But she talked about learning to do what's in front of her in the best way possible. And I really resonated with that. And that's something that I've always tried to do, actually. When we don't know how things are going to work out, when we can't really predict, when predicting and planning and controlling is going to create more chaos and uncertainty and damage than good, is being able to take a step back and doing what's in front of me in the best way possible. And then trusting that everything is going to work out as it should. You know, that is perhaps, you know, that higher wisdom in operation, that if I'm doing what's in front of me in the best way possible, that it will lead to something. And, you know, this has been my experience. This is what I've done. I've always just followed what's in front of me. And this is a strategy that I've learned in life, which has been so, so useful, so rewarding, and has basically brought me to where I am. Now, you know, this is where it's really important to operate and understand our values, and we're able to align with the values that are important to us. So if that value is integrity, it's learning to respond to what's in front of me from my integrity. So I'm doing that from a place of integrity. If you know, one of my great values is peace of mind, you know, my peace of mind is the most important thing in my life today. At my peaceful life. So that's a value that drives me. So I will do whatever's in front of me, and I will do that in a way that brings me towards peace rather than away from it. So knowing your values is really important. And this is something that comes up in the coaching work a lot. And that's a way of being able to approach that next thing that's in front of you. Being in touch with your intuition. Now, this is something that I spoke about with Jenny Blake. You know, being connected with our intuition and how that can bring a lot of self-doubt, because, you know, what voices do we know how to listen to and not? But, you know, when you're connected with your intuition, that often is giving you that next action. So it could be that you've got a decision to make. It could be that you've got an opportunity in front of you. But something, even though that opportunity seems like it's a really good idea, something in there is not feeling right about it. And I've found it really necessary to go with that feeling. to do that in an integral way, you know, not by dismissing it or denying it or being rude about it, but, you know, doing it in a way that actually, no, this is not the right thing for me right now. So understanding that. So that's doing the next right thing, what's in front of you, and trusting that it's going to work out eventually. So the next position, the third position I'm going to talk about, is joy in simplicity. Now, this is something that's really important to me. As I've said to you just now, you know, probably my most important value that drives me in life is peace of mind. And my peaceful, simple life is really important to me. It really helps me just on a day-to-day basis, just really enjoy life and I enjoy what's around me. But this joy in simplicity is a really great position to be able to operate. Because it's always available to us. So no matter what's going on, no matter how much uncertainty, how much fear, how much pain you might be in, how much loss you might be experiencing, there is always joy available to you. I wrote about this in my first book, Your Whole Life Economy, about the resource of joy. Now, the resource of joy is not about denying pain. It's not about denying fear. It's not about denying what's there, but it's just recognizing within that moment that there is joy available to you. And when you can experience joy and simplicity, joy in the most simple things in life, like nature, getting out there in nature and looking at a tree, you know, it might sound a bit weird, but, you know, just really connecting with what's out there, the smells, the sights, the sounds of nature, the birds. This is something that's important to me. But when you can connect with that and get that joy in that moment, and nobody can take that away from you. It's so simple. It's always available. So no matter what chaos is going on in your life, this is always available. Your connection with your nearest and dearest people, your family, your partner. For me, my husband, my connection with my husband, our beautiful relationship and how we just really enjoy simple things together. We're not one for big celebrations, but we love our food. We love our company. And we both enjoy our learning and our studying, and we support each other in that. And for me, it just feels so basic. And you know, nobody can take that away from us. You know, we can lose our home, we can lose all our material goods, we can lose everything in life, but nobody can take that away. And that's why I really love this value of just joy in simplicity. It's always available to you, no matter what's going on. Because often, you know, this fear, when there's fear and uncertainty and anxiety out there, it can create a very self-centered experience. It can make us very frightened for ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a very natural response. But we become frightened about essentially not gaining something that we hope for or losing something that we've already got. So then that creates a rather self-centered fear, because it's about me and mine, right? So when we're kind of much more engaging with, okay, yeah, this is going on, we're acknowledging this is going on, but there's still joy in simplicity, joy in the simplest things in this moment. Nobody can take that away from you. That is yours to have anytime you want it. And that's a very powerful thing to be able to have. And Viktor Frankl spoke about this in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. He was talking about experiences in a concentration camp, the most unimaginable, difficult circumstances, you know, that's out there. I can't think of really anything much worse than what they went through in concentration camps. And he spoke about the being able to connect with joy in those difficult circumstances, and he talked about this as part of the mastery of living. Now, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's just such a powerful thing to be able to operate. So that's a very simple thing as well that can help you to really respond from fear rather than reacting out of fear. Three positions there: getting comfortable with discomfort, doing what's in front of you the best way possible, and joy in simplicity. I'd love to hear what you've got to say about this. Please get in touch, reply to my email, or get in touch through the link on the website, which I've already spoken about, and which will be in the email that I send out with this recording. Now, just to respond to a question I have had from somebody in the community, and this came in a little while ago, but I haven't really had an opportunity to bring it in yet. But somebody asked me about my morning routine, and I felt it's relevant to speak about now, actually. So they asked me if I had a morning routine, and I do have a morning routine. And my morning routine is a bit ridiculous, actually. Well, it's not ridiculous. It's important to me. But when I speak about it, I think it probably sounds quite extreme. I don't think it is, really, but I always think that maybe it sounds extreme. But my morning routine is really important to me. It's like my sacred time in the morning. And this is the time where I really connect with myself, with what's going on in my life. And I really believe, actually, it's my morning routine that's made me who I am. And it's something that's developed over a period of time. I guess I've had some kind of routine since I got sober in 1999. I've tried to develop some kind of connection in the morning, whether that be through reading, through prayer. I do pray. The 12-step program talks about praying. Even though I don't know who I'm praying to, I use set prayers in the 12-step program. And so my morning routine has developed over time. And nowadays, what it is, it's a combination of meditation, breath work, yoga, reading. I think that's it. So it's a combination of those things. And as I said, really important time for me in the morning to be able to connect with myself and where I'm at. And the other thing that's really important that I feel about my morning routine is that it is a regular routine, but sometimes I'll let it go. Like, you know, I will let it go maybe for a day or two. Sometimes at weekends, if I get up and take the dog out, which I do, let my husband stay in bed, I won't do my morning routine. And I think that's sometimes quite important to let it go, because it doesn't become about ritual and control, and I'm not beating myself up for letting it go. So I think it's not so much about rigidity. It's not about a thing to do. It's not about a tick off. You know, my morning routine is for me, and that's why actually I don't really talk about it much, because it's for me, right? This is the one thing that I really do for me, and it feels really important for me. So this is how it goes. Now, I don't have my mobile phone anywhere near me at night or in the morning. My mobile phone is downstairs overnight. And that's quite important for me, because I never used to be like that. I used to have it by my bed, and it would be the first thing that I'd look at in the morning, and I'd just be consumed by this device. And I don't like that. That's not good for me. It's not good for my peace of mind. As I said, my peace of mind is my most important thing. So that's not good for my peace of mind. So that's the first thing. That's not anywhere near in the morning. So I get up and I do a bit of breath work, just to sort of clear my head, and I focus on box breathing, which is equal length of time in and then hold for an equal length of time, exhale for an equal length of time, and then hold for an equal length of time. So you've got inhale, hold, exhale, hold, and that's box breathing. And that just really sort of clears my head. And then I do a meditation, and my meditation is very simple, focusing on my breath, Vipassana type meditation. I don't have any devices. I don't like devices. And I simply focus on my breath for a period of time. So I sit and focus on my breath, and I don't have a timer or anything. And so this has become quite important to me, because, you know, when I sit with myself and try to focus on my breath, which is not an easy thing to do, sounds like it should be, but it's not, I get a measure of where I'm at that moment. So I get to notice where my head's going. Sometimes my head is much busier than other times. But I only know that when I sit and try and listen. So sometimes, this week, I think, you know, I've been meditating for about 16 minutes. So I just close my eyes, I take a note at the time, and then I see how long I meditate for. And it's been about 16 minutes this week, except this morning it was about 11 minutes. So what that tells me, it tells me a little bit about where I'm at. It gives me a bit of a gauge about where I'm at. And also there's so much more about meditation I'm not going to talk about now. It's a topic I'm really passionate about, and I'll probably will do some episodes on this coming up. So I do that. And then I do some exercises. Now I have a problem with my back. So I do exercises from the osteopath that to help me stay out of pain with my back. So I do my back exercises, and then I do a bit of yoga, and then I do a reading. And my reading is often some kind of yoga philosophy, which I really love, or 12-step readings. And actually, there was a reading. I'm just getting the book. I did a reading this morning that felt kind of appropriate to what I was talking about today. And it's this book here, which is The Courage to Change. And One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. So Al-Anon is part of the 12-step fellowships. It is the sister fellowship to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's for families of alcoholics. So it's for people who have family that suffer from alcoholism. And I love the fellowship of Al-Anon. It is about emotional recovery for me, and I've got so much from it. So today's reading was really pertinent, actually. And it said, my higher power does not put any challenges before me that I am unable to face. So remember, when I talk about higher power, you know, that is it could be God, it could be Allah, it could be, I don't know, Buddha. It could be just this higher wisdom that I believe is out there. So, you know, that's how I connect to it. So the comfort I find in that knowledge can overcome my fears. So I can't believe that they said this today. So my higher power does not put any challenges before me that I am unable to face. The comfort I find in that knowledge can overcome my fears. It often feels like we're being given more than we can cope with. That's never been the case for me. It's never the case for most people. Once we can get ourselves into that kind of state of regulation and being able to respond to fear rather than react from it. So then there's another little quote, and it says, the lure of the distant and the difficult is deceptive. The great opportunity is where you are. And again, I couldn't believe that this was the reading today, because I'd already planned about what I was going to say about the, you know, having the joy in the moment and that kind of stuff. So it's very much about being where you are and recognizing the opportunity of where you are. There's another position that I like to try and practice in life, which is related to the things I've already spoken about, and that is recognizing that whatever happens, it's not happening to me, it's happening for me. So when discomfort comes, when uncertainty comes, when we're hit by fears, try to understand that this is not happening to me, this is happening for me. So whatever is in front of us is a position that we can grow through and grow from. And when we have the ability to respond, we know we can do that in a really positive way, and we can begin to make a positive contribution. And that feels really important right now as we're coming out in this really uncertain world, and we don't know what the hell is going to happen, really, do we? I think that's all I've got to say on the matter. Obviously, I'm still here by myself. It's the first time it's happened. Of course, I want people to join me. It's always lovely. I'm always really grateful when people join me, but I'm carrying on anyway. And just to say, next week, I do have a guest coming along, and it is Michael Carsuni, and he is Jenny Blake's husband. If you heard the episode with Jenny Blake, you'd have heard us talking about Michael. And getting him on here. So that's actually happening next week. And we're going to be talking about, so the topic of our subject next week is, there is no such thing as procrastination. So we're taking away the concept of procrastination. We're basically removing it from the world, and we're putting it back. We're putting something else in its place. What that something else is, I don't know. That's what we're going to discuss, and we're going to have a bit of fun with that. I'd really love you to join me for that session. Come along and have some fun with us. But in the meantime, keep well, and thank you for listening.